Welcome back to the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. With me again is Ben Solak, and we are, it's fair to say the word, handful of picks in now to our guest mock draft for the 2019 season as we get you guys ready for the 2019 NFL Draft. Super excited about today. We've got two really great picks. Ben, I think I asked you this last time, but have there been any big surprises for you so far? Do you think that Quinnen was going to last all the way till four? Did you think he was going to last after this? What did you think?
Yeah, honestly, I thought he'd last after this because I didn't think that the Raiders could justify taking a defensive tackle. I kind of asked
gotta
Ted.
Pick the talent, like, right?
Yeah, when I asked Ted like what positions he felt he could eliminate, because I wanted to see if he was willing to eliminate defensive tackle, because that's by far the strongest position group on their roster.
So you set him up. You tried to set him up.
Listen. I'm out here getting info. I'm just preparing to win the mock draft competition come the last week of April. But,
okay.
So I was a little surprised to see Quinnen. I'm really excited to see how this cascades through the rest of the draft, man. It's going to be fun.
Yes. So continue our pick. I guess we got to recap really quick. I don't know if we'll be able to recap it every single show because we're eventually going to get to the point where I'm naming off these names a million times. People are going to get sick of it. But in our guest mock draft so far, Kyler Murray went number one to Arizona. Nick Bosa went number two to San Francisco. Josh Allen went number three to the Jets. And then Quinnen Williams, number four, to the Oakland Raiders. Which brings us now to a team near and dear to my heart. The place where I am from, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they have the number five overall pick. And to make the pick for us, we have Carmen Vitale on the line with us. I got to know Carmen really well from covering the Bucks when I was at Peter Report. She is kick-ass at what she does. We're really excited. Carmen, thank you so much for joining the show.
Wow, what an intro. Thanks, guys, for having me. I'm so excited.
I followed the whirlwind that was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers season from 2018, as did you, but people kind of know my perspective of it on this show pretty well already because we've talked about it at length, but it was a pretty crazy year. I mean, you had the Jameis Winston suspension early on in the year and then Fitzpatrick absolutely balling out. You know, then the season's kind of, the roller coaster continued in the middle of the season. What was it like, I guess, from your perspective of, you know, this kind of roller coaster of the season that it was, the talent that was on this Buccaneers team that just didn't really come to fruition? What was it like kind of watching that from your side of the coin?
I mean, everything I think is magnified when you do realize that, I mean, these guys do believe in each other, and it's the frustration levels are so high and it's so intense. And I think, you know, not to say, you know, I'm closer, I'm in the building, but I am in the building.
Well, you kind of are. You work for the team, so I guess, you know, you kind of are in the building.
Right. So you feel the tension and you feel the frustration even that much more. And so I just, you know, the biggest thing for me was I had to bite my tongue the most, I think, when I would see people saying these guys don't care and all this other stuff, because they cared. They cared a lot, and it was really frustrating to not have them be able to put it all together, and they were the most frustrated, I think, of anybody. So the dynamic between, you know, Fitz and Jameis and the back and forth with the quarterbacks, that was really just, it was a whirlwind, and it was confusing, and it made for a very different dynamic that I think was really hard to overcome in the end. So, but no one was more frustrated than everybody in the building. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure. No, I mean, you talked there and you touched on it a little bit, but I mean, it's kind of natural for these guys with going for, especially a position that's as important as quarterback is, when you have one guy who's going off, but you know, the other guy's kind of here to stay. It was a really weird situation. So I just wanted to, yeah, kind of piggyback off of that. It was kind of tough to see, but there's no doubt about the talent that is on this team, right? I mean, yeah. It's easy for me to say because I've been around the Tampa area for a long time and I've seen some not very talented Buccaneers team, but I mean, this is even still a really talented roster, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, we got a coach to come out of retirement for it.
Yeah, that's very true. Good way to put it. Yeah.
I think that really tells you all you need to know about a lot of things. Like, and the thing is, like, Coach Arians, BA, he is very, you know, particular, and he was very open about, listen, he wasn't open to every situation coming out of, you know, coming out of retirement, and he, the roster really sold him. So he believes in the, you know, the talent, and he said that he's never walked into a situation that has skill position players, especially. So like a, such a stacked room of skill position players as he is now. So I that's kind of what I defer to. We got a coach to come out of retirement, so you have to think that our roster is talented.
Now you have the new coach. He comes in out of retirement. You talked about some of the lack of stability that you had there, maybe in 2017, in terms of, you know, how much do these guys want to play, and there's so much confusion with the quarterbacks. Bruce Arians now coming in, the new head coach. To what degree has stability been added? Obviously, we know, like, DeSean Jackson, you know, he leaves, he goes to Philadelphia. Gerald McCoy has been a player who's been discussed. Is there the idea that you know, Arians needs some time to maybe turn over the roster a little bit, or is Arians really able to kind of pull together guys who are from, you know, different eras of the Buccaneers, different coaching staffs, and be cohesive in year one?
I honestly think that he can be cohesive, and that's because of the guys under him. You know, you've heard, especially with the defense, you've heard Coach Bowles say that we're tailoring it, you know, to the guys that we have. But that's not necessarily just coach speak either, because all of his defenses, if you look back on the Jets and everything, he does play to, he identifies the strengths of every single one of his players he has, and then he makes the system fit that. He doesn't try to just plug and chug them into a system that he's already come up with. I mean, he is, like, walking past his office, you'll see every single day there's a fresh set of plays or whatever on his board, like packages, just full-on packages that he has, you know, I don't know if they're new, I don't know if they're whatever, but they're stuff that he's identified that's going to work with this roster. So it's pretty incredible to see that every single day there's a new set of those on his whiteboard, and it's just him working through it. And that's, you know, kind of the approach that all of these coaches, from what I know, are taking to this. You know, we have these pieces. They're incredibly talented pieces. If we can't make them work, then we're not very good coaches.
So. Yeah, no, I've noticed that, I think, the most out of this coaching staff when they've come on, that, you know, you kind of listen to them. And I said this kind of in the introductory press conference, both with Arians and then with his assistants that we were able to get early on in the offseason. And I said, like, I haven't believed in a guy when he said these things to me from a football standpoint in a long time. And it just kind of really did make you feel like, because, I mean, every coach loves to say, like, oh, you know, we're just going to get the most out of our players. But sometimes we know that that's not the case. I kind of believe that in Arians, which brings me to my next question with you, is that we obviously at the Draft Network and just draft media in general, we like to look at team needs, look at maybe GM history, coach history, and we like to figure out preferences that they have for certain players, piece together things and really know where they might be targeting certain draft picks at certain draft ranges. But do you really think that the Buccaneers, it kind of sounds like they're almost wide open. Like, the roster is kind of, it's talented already. It's got a lot of stuff around it. Do you think that truly the Buccaneers, more than other teams, come draft weekend are going to take this best player available mentality? Or do you think that it's going to kind of move one way or the other, maybe towards a couple of certain positions?
No, I think that, you know, especially when you're sitting at the fifth overall pick, I mean, when you're talking best player available at fifth overall, that's a damn good player. Like, that is, you know, a player that's going to carry franchise at this point. So, and I think that if you look even at Jason's history of taking guys, I mean, I don't know that anybody had us taking a defensive tackle last, you know, go round.
Sure, yeah.
Down and got Vita. And then same with O.J. Howard the year before in the first round. So it's kind of like, you know, you have these guys that either that fall to you and you're just like, I can't even, you know, I can't pass on this guy. And now when you're sitting at five, I mean, the guys that are falling to you at five, you can't even really call it fall at that point. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that, and I think that that sentiment, though, is shared by the coaching staff and by Coach Arians. They just want guys that can play, you know, and they will fit them in because their schemes are so fluid and flexible and all that kind of stuff. You have the freedom to take the best players and fit them in to your system rather than force a need and maybe take a guy higher or, you know, miss out on someone because you were trying to address, you know, another position. I don't think that that's, you know, enters into their mentality at all. And again, that's my opinion. That's what I've seen. I'm not speaking for either.
Sure.
Make that caveat every time. But that's the impression that I've gotten. And that's my own opinion. And again, looking back at history and everything like that. So they seem to be completely on the same page. I mean, Jason and Bruce have been friends for years. So they do share a lot of the same ideologies, and it's really cool to have them be so cohesive together.
Trev, do we want to get into this pick? Because I really want to talk about this pick.
The
selection.
Okay. Yeah, no, we could do that. Ben already fast-forwarded to it. All right, I like it. Okay, Carmen, then that means that you are on the clock. You have the choice. Kyler's gone. Bose is gone. Allen's gone. Quinnen's gone. You talked about potentially best player available. So who will that best player available be? Who will the Tampa Bay Buccaneers be selecting in this guest mock draft?
In my head.
Yes.
It's Ed Oliver. I mean, I've been really high on Ed Oliver before this. And I think I even said it on Twitter like a couple weeks ago, before his pro day, before he got back on everybody's top, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Like,
you're
and everything
making
like
sure
that.
We know that
before
this is before the
cool,
pro day.
Trevor.
Okay.
Before it was
before
cool.
It was cool, all right? I am the Ed Oliver hipster, okay?
Okay.
I said that I would be okay with, you know, not getting Quinnen Williams in favor of Ed Oliver. And it's because of the fact that what are the pieces you already have. Because, like you said, he's more of a gap penetrator, and he's just so athletically, like, he's gifted. He's so quick. And I know that at his pro day, people were saying, and I forget who it was, and it was a guy from the Draft Network I saw on Twitter. He was like, I really thought he'd run like a 4.6, and I'm like, okay. But he ran 4.71, 4.75.
Right.
When is this dude ever going to run 40 yards down the field as it is?
Hopefully never.
No, and I saw that, so he's like short shuttle time was like 4.19 or something like that. So I'm like, you want to get into stats?
Yeah.
And you want to get into comparisons that way? DeSean Jackson had a 4.19 short shuttle time. So like, if you're going to read into all of that stuff, then cool. Like, I've got another stat for you, and that's more important to me than how fast he can get down the field, you know, in 40 yards when it's not going to happen as part of the, you know, the defensive front. But I will say that there are, and I don't think that you can ever dismiss these, there are some intangibles about him that I've read and I've seen that I'm just like...
Like love and horses.
This is the type of guy... Yes, he's a huge horse guy. But
red flag. Red flag.
It's not a red flag.
That is not a red flag. Eric Berry, you take Eric Berry out of the game immediately if you ever played him.
Here's the thing. I don't know if you've seen it. So you've obviously seen the picture of him standing on his horse.
Yes.
So I read online a quote, and I forgot where it was. I think it was somewhere on SB Nation. But he essentially, like, I'm not worried about him lining up anywhere on the defensive front. I don't care if he's taking on a tackle because of this thing he said about his horse Oreo. I guess when he got his horse, he was like real stubborn and ignorant, I think he called him. He was like a really tough to deal with horse. So he essentially had to break him, and he had to fight with this 1,000-pound animal to get him under control and to like train him. So he's like, I've been fighting with once you fight with a 1,000-pound, like essentially wild animal, I'm not worried about a 300-pound offensive lineman. So I have no fear. He said Oreo stripped him of his fear. And I'm like, oh my God, I want this guy. And I want this guy now.
That's like some Rocky final workout montage kind of stuff,
this
right?
This is like, why I don't like horses, man. I don't need to be fighting with no 1,000-pound animal. I can barely handle my dog. That's too much.
Ben, but I want a guy that's fighting with a 1,000-pound
animal. 100%. Yes, Ben.
Right, yeah. The football players can do that.
Okay, but like, Ben, do you like the pick? What do you think about Oliver?
Right. So my number one thing is, you know, don't want to take defensive tackles in back-to-back years. And that's a great point, because you only play one of them at once. And so you can't take back-to-back ones, you know, back-to-back years. It'd be too much of an issue. Putting Oliver next to Vea is unbelievable. Imagine having to choose who you double-team.
Right.
Just imagine having to make that choice.
Right.
Like, as an offensive line coach or as an offensive coordinator, you're just condemning somebody. Like, somebody's going to die. It's your left guard or your right guard. It's your call. Like that duo and the different skill sets that they bring is really, really exciting. And obviously for a guy like Todd Bowles, who's going to be running a lot of multiple fronts, you're going to get Oliver not always in the three tech. You're going to get him in the two, in the four, and the five. You're going to get him on the bevy, on the spectrum. And that's what he needs, because with his level of quickness and his ability to turn corners, you want him shooting different gaps. You want him slanting. So it makes a ton of sense fit-wise. that I definitely, like, you know, I was excited about this pick because, you know, you're going here, you're assuming now, I'm guessing that Gerald McCoy, if he's not becoming a situational player, then maybe he's leaving. Obviously, you still have the void left by Quan Alexander that you have to be cognizant of. And so this is truly like Quinn and Oliver back-to-back elite players, top five players on my board, but players that, like, could potentially be falling out of these slots because of need. Well, no, like, the writers that we brought in have said, listen, we're going best player, we're getting the impact players, and yeah. I love that. It's so exciting to see.
Yep.
His speed is the most important part of all of this, and yep. It's something that I've heard from our staff that's the big emphasis of this defense is speed. So you want quick, and Oliver is quick.
Ed Oliver is more than quick.
Young man
can scoot, as Ben Solak would say. Carmen, thank you, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. That was great insight on the Buccaneers. So thank you for taking the time to join us.
Absolutely, thanks for having me, guys.
We will be back in just a second. We've got to finish out this podcast. We got another half coming. New York Giants on the clock. That's a really important one, Ben. They could go a lot of different ways because that organization is whoo. Not great right now. So everybody stick around. We'll be back. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. Here with me is Ben Solak. We just had Carmen Vitale pick for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. She went with Ed Oliver there at number 5. Just to recap the board, we got Kyler at 1. Nick Bosa went 2. Josh Allen went 3, Quinnen Williams went 4, now Ed Oliver goes 5. Ben, now we got an interesting one. We got the New York Giants that are up. And is this one of those? I know you're excited about the first couple ones, but I feel like it all, like, comes to, the chaos could all come to fruition here with the Giants.
Right. I said, like, I'm interested in Oakland and I'm interested in Tampa because I feel like they could cause problems. And they did. And so now we see what the heck happens. And it's funny because we were talking to our guest before the show and he was like, man, you know what would have been nice is not these picks. And we were like, yeah, pretty much.
This is very true. All right. You guys heard the laugh there. That is John Schmelk. He works for the Giants over at Giants.com. John, thank you so much for joining us. We're sorry that the other beat reporters made this so hard on you, man, but how you doing?
I'm doing great, and frankly, guys, I think this is now I know what the Giants war room is going to feel like, because I know it's not going to be easy for them at pick number 6 in a month when they know who they're picking, which, by the way, before I make this selection, I will make clear that literally I saw the Giants director of college scouting in the building for the first time in about 3 weeks on Friday, right before the end of the month. So they haven't gotten back together since the pro days to make their decision yet. So this is simply a guess on my part at this point.
Okay. Well, your guess is going to be better than ours. But before we get to your pick, just want to kind of round out everything that's going on. I mean, a lot of stuff happened throughout the year. You know, it's certainly ups and downs. They're picking at number 6 for a reason. Then you've got, obviously, the massive Odell Beckham trade. I mean, we'll get to the details kind of on that. But just an overview of how this 2018 season was, what were the expectations going in? And then I guess kind of maybe the ebbs and flows of maybe how they ended up here picking number 6 overall.
Yeah, look, I think the Giants thought they were going to be better than 5 wins when everything started back in March. I think everyone should have taken a big hint when on the Tuesday before the season started, they liquidated about 6 or 7 players from their final 53 with guys that were cut by other teams. And usually when that happens and you're recycling, you know, 15-20% of your roster with street free agents, that probably means the group of guys you have isn't very good. And I think once we got there, we were like, oh boy, this could be a big problem. And it really comes back to some of the failures in the drafts over the past, 2012, I guess, where you really don't have any third, fourth, or fifth round picks that you really need to round out the depth on your roster have really worked out. So they had to kind of go by the seat of their pants. So they try to fix it back in 2016 when they gave big money free agent contracts to Janoris Jenkins, Olivier Vernon, Damon Snacks Harrison. Two of those three guys aren't here anymore. So look, they did the best they could coming off a 3-13 year. I think they probably thought their defense would give them a little bit more than it did. It took about a half a season for them to figure out the offensive line to make it not awful and make it palatable. And I think one thing a lot of people overlook, and if you look at a lot of the the numbers on play frequency and things like that, it played out in the second half of the year. They asked Manning and the Giants offensive line to block on straight dropbacks, whether it was under center or shotgun, almost 50% less in the second half of the year. They used a ton of play action passes, right, and it was really effective. And that's why in the final eight games, you saw them average, I think, around 26.5 points per game in the final eight. It's because they really changed the way they played. And I think if they can carry that into next year, even without Beckham, I think the offense is going to be fine. They added Kevin Zeitler. He's really good. But the defense is a big, big problem that they still need to get fixed.
Right, and I'm glad you brought up really two big points there in terms of the second half of the season. You saw the Giants' offense playing much better, and also the fact that, you know, it's all about kind of what they can do around Eli Manning right now. And so, you know, Eli, now that I think Odell's out, you know, Eli's probably the biggest conversation topic. Maybe he was even bigger than Odell previously. So if we look at if we look at what he can offer for the 2019 season, I guess my question for you is, you know, having followed Eli's career and now kind of reaching his last final few years, however long it is, how much does Eli offer the team? Like, how much can he power an offense? I don't want to make you rank him in the quarterbacks in the league or anything like that, but how much help does a guy like Eli need to succeed at this point in his career? Can he still really power an offense?
No, and I think that's a really fair question. And I think when people say, and they get mad when Dave Gettleman comes out and says, Eli's not shot, you can still win with Eli, I don't think that's Dave Gettleman saying Eli is a top five quarterback in the NFL.
Sure.
I don't think that's Dave Gettleman saying that he thinks Eli Manning is the 2011 version of himself, when that quarterback really did, you know, power the Giants to the Super Bowl. He had 5,000 yards passing that year. He was a monster. He had one of the best quarterback seasons I've ever seen. He was great. He's not that guy anymore. But that doesn't mean that he still can't make the throws. He doesn't make them as consistently as he used to. And if he has protection, he can be a really, really good guy to always get you into the right play, do everything right pre-snap, and be a steadying influence on the team. So is he that guy that's going to power you and lead you? No. He's not the one-man force anymore that has that in him consistently. Will he flash it sometimes? Sure, but he's not going to do it game in, game out. So you need some help around him. And I think that's why you got the offensive line better. Right tackle is still a hole, but the other four spots are fairly secure. And as much as the Beckham loss hurts, look, Sterling Shepard still wins one-on-one.
Sure.
Evan Ingram's hard to cover one-on-one out of the tight end spot. Saquon Barkley is uncoverable as a receiver out of the backfield. Golden Tate's a very good wide receiver. He has plenty of weapons. I don't think the offense is going to be, you know, Kansas City Chiefs explosive, rocking up 30 points a game. But I think the offense with Eli Manning will do more than enough to win games, much like they did in the second half of the year last year. So I think that's where Eli is. I think he's probably, you know, in the, you know, towards the end of the middle third, you know, maybe around 20th. You know, give or take quarterbacks in the league, yeah, you know, somewhere in that area. But you know what? I think a lot of those guys are interchangeable. Like, depending on the team around them, is Kirk Cousins that much better than Eli Manning, depending on the talent around them? I don't know. I think maybe a little bit, but I think it really depends on the team around him. So I think he's in that really, really thick group after the top two tiers of quarterbacks.
Going back to you talked a little bit there about defense kind of going into the draft and that mindset of getting better there. Whether that is ultimately the pick that you make or not, we'll get to that in a little bit. But certainly I think, you know, 2 years ago I would have said the best defensive players on the Giants would have been Jason Pierre-Paul, Damon Harrison, and Landon Collins. All three of those guys are now gone. So it seems just very much like a gutted defense. And I just want to kind of open it up and say, what's the plan? Like, do you have a good pulse on where they want to maybe start rebuilding that defense first, whether you think they're going to go more towards edge? I know they need some linebacker help as well. The secondary, I know they got Beal coming up. They signed Bethea. They've got Jabril Peppers. But are they still, you know, is that a big emphasis? And so, which is where on that defense are you thinking that the team might be leaning towards as its big pickups over the next couple of years?
They need players to affect the quarterback. And they knew Olivier Vernon was the best pass rusher last year, but they did not think that at the price point they were going to get what I like to call production per dollar for that contract. Mm-hmm. So that's why if they didn't move him for Kevin Zeitler, they probably would have let him go just because of the money situation. The same reason they traded Jason Pierre-Paul last offseason. They thought he was a really good player, or a good player, but they didn't think he was worth the contract he was on, and they're willing to take that 1 year hit in order to get that cap space back. So they need players to affect the quarterback. Right now on the roster, their edge rushers are Kareem Martin, who's a solid player, but he's not going to wow you with his pass rush. Lorenzo Carter is someone that, you know, you guys are very familiar with him from last year. He has all the tools to be a pass rusher, but he played off the ball at Georgia. So he comes here, and he's still a better off-the-ball player, but they think he can develop into a guy that can, you know, come off the edge a little bit. Beyond that, I mean, the cupboard's fairly bare. So it would not surprise me if they come out of this draft with at least two ends, and if one of their first two picks is not an edge player, I would be beyond shocked.
Hey, both those first two picks are first-rounders. So you're saying a first-round edge to the Giants pen that puppy in?
If for one of those two picks, yes.
Oh, wow. So let me ask you this.
Maybe
then,
two.
Because, yeah, Maybe two. Dave Gettleman, obviously now the GM for the Giants, has been a couple of seasons now, but he had the history at the Panthers. And I remember a Twitch stream where we were talking about on staff, you know, like, Dave Gettleman drafted Vernon Butler when he did not need Vernon Butler. Like, they love to build from the interior, Gettleman did when he was at Carolina. How much do you think...
Defensive tackles, too.
Yeah, exactly. How much do you think that Dave Gettleman's history and his trends in Carolina, you can extrapolate them to the Giants' strategies? Or are there different voices, other guys in the building, who kind of make it a Gettleman 2.0 sort of approach?
No, I mean, look, Dave listens to people. He's going to listen to the coaches. He's going to listen to Chris Pettit, who's his director of college scouting. Kevin Abrams is the assistant general manager. Chris Marrow is the executive. It was the vice president of a player evaluation. Mark Kahn is there, too, who was one of his lieutenants from Carolina. So he's going to listen to those guys. But everyone tries to read the tea leaves with what Dave Gettleman says. He says what he thinks, and I think that's why people get confused by Dave, because he actually says what he believes when nobody else ever actually says that.
Right, sure.
That has the general manager job in the NFL. He tells you straight. He told you last year, guys, I'm going to try to fix the offensive line. What did he do? He gets Jaswell Hernandez in the second round. He trades for Kevin Zeitler. Now, he still needs a right tackle, but then he signed Nate Solder. So there you go. Offensive line problem solved. He said this year we need to do a better job getting after the quarterback. So, yes, I think he will start inside out. He already has two good young defensive tackles in Dalvin Tomlinson and B.J. Hill. I think that's not a need. But then again, I didn't think it was a need last year when they had Snacks Harrison and Dalvin Tomlinson, and then you're after B.J. Hill in round three. So I would not be surprised at all if he picks a defensive lineman at any point in this draft, whether it is edge or tackle. And I think when you look at his history, it explains why Landon Collins didn't come back too, right? You know, he'd never spent money on safeties in Carolina. He just didn't think the safety was a high-value position, which is why I think he prefers to have Peppers on his rookie deal, who I think, by the way, is more coverage potential than Landon Collins does, not as physical of a player. And I think he thinks, you know, Antoine Bethea will, you know, stick back there and just not make any mistakes, which is something you couldn't say about Curtis Riley last year. So, yeah, I think the focus will be in that front seven defensive line specifically.
All right. Well, then why don't we get right to it? So number six overall, John, who you taking for the Giants? I know you talked about edge might be a position that's going to happen in the first two picks. Is that going to happen here at number six? Who you taking for the Giants?
All right. Well, first I'm going to get on the phone and I'm going to make a call to the Miami Dolphins. I'm going to make a call to my division rival, Washington Redskins.
Okay.
And I'm going to see if they want to come get their quarterback. And if they want to get their quarterback and they want to give me their one this year and their one next year, and maybe get an extra two or three in the mix too.
Oh, no question. Yes, because you make that trade.
To me, absolutely. Because the way I look at it right now, and frankly, guys, and I wouldn't say this publicly as the Giants' fake general manager in this situation, I would probably just take the one next year too, to be quite honest with you. But if you look at it, I think all the players in this group are a mess. I could see the guy that goes at 6 also go at 12. I could see the guy that goes at 8 go at 15. I think this next group of players is just a big swath of guys. I like Dwayne Haskins. I don't love him. I think he's a good player. He'd be my fourth quarterback in last year's class after I had a pre-draft Darnold, Mayfield, Rosen, and then I would have Haskins as my fourth guy. I think him and Rosen are similar. I'm assuming that I haven't traded for Josh Rosen yet, which I would certainly explore if the Arizona Cardinals are trading him at number one. So if I have to make the pick here, and I can't get Rosen and I can't trade back just because of the positional value, and I think it's worth rolling the dice, I would take Dwayne Haskins, quarterback out of Ohio State.
Ooh, okay. All right. Now, I'll have you explain that a little bit, but I did want to ask you, you brought up Rosen there, and that's something I do want to talk about because Rosen is linked as a potential Giants destination for him if, you know, in this mock draft that we're talking about here, Kyler goes number one. So it's very unlikely that they'd keep both guys. We had Lance Zierlein on to make that first pick, and he picked Kyler, and he said, you know, hey, maybe you keep both, but obviously you'd like to get an asset for one of them because both of them can't play. How aggressive do you honestly think the Giants might be for a guy like Rosen if he becomes available?
It's a good question. I think they liked him as a throw of the ball last year. I think everyone does. I think there were, and frankly, understandable, legitimate concerns about his durability, which, you know, who can blame him? The guy had shoulder injuries and concussion problems in college. I'd be worried about that, too. I'm not sure what they decide to do this year. I know I would be more than willing to trade my second-round pick and run for the hills with my potential franchise quarterback and be very happy about it. If the Cardinals insisted on 17, I would say, all right, well, do you want to give me your third round pick back? And then maybe we can have a conversation and then maybe we can make that happen. But yeah, look, I think, let me put it this way. I think Rosen at 17 or the top pick in the second round is better value than Haskins at 6.
Oh, okay.
And that's how I look at that.
Sure. Okay. All right. All right. Sound good to you, Ben? Dwayne Haskins, your thoughts? What do you think?
Listen, how are you navigating that, Poppy? That's the real question here. Now you got the young guy waiting in the wings. You've got the veteran. What does the record have to be after 6, 7, 8 games where Haskins starts to come in? You know, but once you put yourself into that situation, it's just mighty tricky. So I'd be
no, you know, trust you, me, and guys, look, I got to be in that locker room, and I got to listen to all the questions, so trust me. I didn't want to make this pick because this is going to make my life a whole lot more complicated if that happens. But, no, honestly, you know, and I just want to expand on my reasoning for a second. Here's the thing. You know, Montez Sweat's numbers at the combine were great. Mm-hmm. I didn't see a guy, though, that when I watched him on tape, one with speed and quickness around the edge. I saw him win with length. So just a guy that wins with length, is that going to work in the pros with placing all these defensive, these offensive tackles with long arms? I don't know. Christian Wilkins doesn't get me excited. I'm not touching Rashawn Gary. I really like Brian Burns, but I think I can get him at 12 if I trade back. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think a cornerback is good enough to pick this high in this draft class. Juwan Taylor is a really good player, but a guy you're going to play at right tackle at six, it just the position value, even though other guys might have a better raw grade than Haskins, I think the position value of the pick is something I would have to go for. And it's just too risky. As much as I like next year's class, and I do, you just never know whether or not you're going to be able to trade up or not to get who you need, which is why, by the way, if I do trade down, I insist on the one next year so then I can use that pick to go get my quarterback if I need to.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean,
Smelk out here with the long-range view, baby.
No, I like it. I like it because, you know, we all love to look at the next year's class, but the fact is that nothing's guaranteed. But I will say, you know, as somebody who covered the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this past year, having a little bit of a quarterback controversy makes for never a dull moment, my friend. So if that happens, you will have an entertaining season nonetheless. John, thank you so much for joining us, man. Thank you so much. That was great, dude.
Anytime.
All right, Ben. Jacksonville's next. Two quarterbacks are already off the board. I don't know which way they're going to go. We're going to have to find out. That's for next time, though. Are you ready for it, Ben? Do you think that Jacksonville's another wild card, I guess, because they can go anywhere.
Listen to me, Trevor. Could Brian Burns.
Could we get Brian the Burns. First tight end at 7, Ben?
Listen, put Brian Burns opposite Yannick Ngakoue. Rush out of the wide 9. Prosper forever.
You're a madman.
That's all I want in the entire world.
You're a madman. I love it. All right, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. And until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.